everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Sal and Bob Show. We have a kind of a different show here today. We have a guest in studio. We're not at a steakhouse. We're in studio with our pal, fellow comedian, and friend, Mr. Matt McClower. How are you, Matt?
Oh, I'm great, Bob. It's good to be here again in the studio.
Yes, this is your third time, and we talked about that a little. We got to give you something for being a third-timers club.
Yeah, being the inaugural member of the three-timers club, right?
Yes, you are the inaugural member. Maybe a sweatshirt or a... Mm-hmm.
Smoking jacket.
Yeah. And on the line with us is my show partner, Mr. Sal D'Amelio, coming to you from Lowell, Arkansas. Sally, how are you?
How you guys doing? I'm down here in the South. People are making fun of my accent.
Uh-oh.
So that's a first.
Well, at least they didn't tell you you have a pretty mouth, did they?
Yeah, no.
So you're in Lowell, Arkansas at the Grove Comedy Club, a brand new club, right?
Yeah, I think it's fairly new, but great club. Owners Bill and Rhonda run a really great club. We had a packed house last night with Greg Morton, and they have steak here. So the owner told me I need to have a steak here tonight.
All right.
So I told him about the podcast, and he said, "We have steaks. You got to have a steak." I said, "Okay, I'm in." So I'm going to have a steak tonight at the Grove Comedy Club. I'll let you know on the next episode how it was.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that review. How did your shows go last night?
Show was good. We had one show. The place seats probably about 200, and it was pretty much full. And you guys all know Greg Morton. He kind of, he's very, obviously very, very funny from America's Got Talent. But he attracts kids. Kids like to come see him. So
We
had a few 12, 13-year-olds in the crowd last night. We're going to have a few tonight at the 6 o'clock show. So I've got to clean it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's always
fun. Yeah, okay.
Have you ever had the thing where you do a show and there's kids in the audience and then their parents are just like, we don't care, let it fly.
Yeah.
But you just feel like a creep.
Yeah. Yeah, you get up to a punchline that you know is disgusting, and you're like, "Are you sure?"
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure you'll clean it up, Sally. I know you're having good shows down there.
Absolutely, but good to be on the episode, Matt. How are you, buddy? Congratulations on your marriage.
Thank you, Sal. Thank you very much. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we do have a newlywed here. We need to say that. Matt and Patty got married in Orlando, Florida at Disney World.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thank you for mentioning it on the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, previously.
It was a fun time down there.
Yeah, it was a wonderful time. It was good to have you there.
Thank you.
Sal, sorry.
You know what, man? I'm jealous, man. I'm no longer married. I got one under my belt. But mm-hmm. I wish I would have got married at Disney World.
Yeah, I would have. My first marriage would have ended the way it was going to end anyway, but at least I would have gotten a ride on Space Mountain. I would have had something out of the deal.
Yeah.
Well, here we are, man. There's three of us, and we need to acknowledge our producer, the very funny comedian Nate Armbruster. He's waving at the microphone here.
Yeah.
He's the wizard making this all happen with two guys in a studio in Michigan and one guy on the road in Lowell, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And I should mention, I was at the Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle last night seeing our guest, Sal, and Matt was headlining and absolutely tore it up. It was fun to watch. So
that's awesome. Congrats, buddy.
Thank you, Sal. Thank you very much. You guys paved the way for me. You got me going, you know?
Well, I don't know about that. I think, you've been at it, what, 15 years?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, same with me. So I think we kind of came up at the same time.
You might be the first person who ever paid me to do a set, though.
I think you said that, and I don't remember where that was.
Maxie's of Flint.
Maxie's, okay.
You were featuring, and you threw me some money to open for you.
Okay.
And I never forgot that either.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was either that or and then probably the first ever opportunity I had other than that was the emceeing at the Holly.
Yeah, okay.
So goes way back, and Sal... He was one of the first people who ever gave me the opportunity to feature at Portofino, you know? And I... Yeah, I had some tough sets down there in the early going, you know?
Yeah. Well, we all do.
Oh, yeah.
In the early going. And listen, whatever I threw you for Maxie's, it wasn't enough.
Oh, yeah.
I still owe you. Sal's laughing because everybody who did Maxie's in Flint knew... I mean, you talk about... you're just playing whack-a-mole for 45 minutes up there. Well, anyway, I do remember somewhat that night, and I know you did well. And it's,
yeah, at the early going, you don't know either. You have to do it a couple times and go, okay, this place is what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can be, you know, I'm my own worst critic. So
yeah, I didn't get shot, so I must have done well.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Sally, you're down there, and you you sent me some pictures. And there's some livestock actually living indoors. Is that, can you tell me the story about that?
Well, so here I am. I'm at the Grove Comedy Club. They put you up at a, I wouldn't even call it a condo. Matt Hole called it a condo, but it's more like a log cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
And and then the owner invited me over to his house, which is a bigger house in the woods, and they have pet goats.
A bigger house in the woods.
literally in the woods, you guys. It's a beautiful home. I mean, it's incredible. But yeah, they don't have dogs and cats. They have two goats, and I got to feed goats. They like animal crackers, believe it or not. And I just got to feed the goats. I've never fed goats before, and so I've done that down here. Things
are
good. Life
is
good.
That's pretty cool.
Well, listen, this is a good time to say only in comedy would you be put up at a cabin in the woods.
You're put up at a petting zoo.
And you still have shows to do tonight.
Yeah, I got two shows. One at 6 o'clock, man. That's an early show, but
is this one of those benefit shows that they tacked on for some local soccer team, and you have another two, or is this just two tonight?
No. This is how the guy does it. I was just actually talking to him about it because there's a club in Erie, Pennsylvania called Juniors that we all know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I remember a long time ago when I was working there, they moved up their early show, and everybody's kind of doing that in the industry. They're moving the regular 8 o'clock show to 7 o'clock and all that. This guy, I remember Junior's telling me that when they moved their 8 o'clock show to 6:30, their food sales went up like 40%. And I mentioned that to the owner today over breakfast, and he said the same thing. He goes, it's so true. When we did an earlier show, people come in and eat before the show. So he goes, my food sales have gone up. So,
well, typically, it has nothing to do with comedy.
No.
Or the show.
Nothing
it's
whatsoever.
Just that I'm selling more nachos, so that's what I'm going to do. It wasn't done to accommodate the comics or make the show better. It was, you know, so that the chalupa sales would go up.
Well, it's always a good feeling, too, when you go up on stage and there's a plate in front of every single person there.
Yeah.
Now you have to vie for their attention between them and their chicken wings, you know?
I got to say, several nights in
it's
the recent
the
past,
art.
The
That's
chicken wings
saying.
Won.
Yeah.
we've all lost to a plate of appetizers. Mm-hmm.
I've had that one time on stage. I was opening a show. I was a host, and I had to go on stage, and I said to the guy, hey, how's it going? And he literally looked at me up from his plate and goes, I'm eating. And I'm like, oh, sorry.
I'm eating.
I'm the bad guy.
I'm just the show. Oh, well, welcome. Yeah. Welcome to comedy. Mm-hmm. I mean, the three of us, well, the four of us here, we'll know all about that. So, okay. So we're glad you had a good show down there, Sally. And we know you're going to have another good show tonight. Have you done any sightseeing besides the indoor goats today?
No. But the owner told me they have some sort of a bee museum down here somewhere I can go to.
Wait,
I think it's
a bee museum.
I thought that's what he said. It was bees or something. But then there's some other stuff. I can go to Walmart. The headquarters to Walmart is here.
Oh, okay. Well, the bee museum. I'm intrigued by that. I don't know what
I think that's what it is. He told me a couple of museums that I could go to, but I'm like, the Michigan game's on. I only got about 3-4 hours. I mean, how much can I do in 3-4 hours? But
right.
I'm one of these guys that doesn't like to sit in the condo or the cabin, I guess I should say, today. So I'd rather get out. I'm in a Twin Peaks parking lot right now.
Oh, nice. Well, you're down in Arkansas, and I think we talked about this way early on in the history of the Sal and Bob Show. My father was from Arkansas, and a little town.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes, yeah. Little town called Tuckerman, Arkansas. Not even a stoplight in that town when he was born. And I was there probably, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. Yeah. My father from Arkansas, my mother from Newfoundland, which, made for the weirdest combination of two things since Clamato, but they made it work. 8 kids, 7 of which were successful. I'm doing this. So anyway, I hope you have fun down there, buddy.
Yeah, I've never been to Arkansas. I literally have never even set foot in the state. I've never even driven through it because it's not on your way to Florida or anything. Mm-hmm. It's kind of in the middle of the country. So
yeah, you're on your way to Texas, mm-hmm. right? I think. Mm-hmm. But how many people are on their way there? Texas.
yeah, exactly.
I'm pissing off exactly half mm-hmm. our audience mm-hmm. right mm-hmm. now. We love Texas. We love Arkansas. So I want to talk a little real quickly here for people that tune into the show to hear comedy stuff. Both you guys were working at the different clubs mm-hmm. in different parts of the country last night. And
yes.
All of us have worked all over the country, different places, different clubs, different areas of the country, different sensibilities. I'm going to ask this of you, Sal, first, since you're in a parking lot at Twin Peaks in Lowell, Arkansas. what anything different about the crowds in Arkansas last night that from Michigan or from other places you played?
Well, it's only been one show, but I understand what you're saying. We're all comics here. Whenever you do a state or a city or a club that you've never been to, there's kind of like that nervous kind of anxiety before you go up because you've never done comedy here. And
yeah,
I had that feeling last night and I'm like, Jesus, I'm from the North. I'm Italian. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if there's an Italian person in this state, you know? And I'm like, I hope they get me and I hope they, you know my references and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, I had a great set and they got it all. I did all the Italian stuff. And so to me, I felt like I was in, you know, when I was literally on stage last night, I kind of just thought I was back in Michigan somewhere. I mean, the people were the same, but you know, they come up to you after and they've got an accent, like a Southern accent,
yeah.
But they were, you know, I mean, it's like we live in the same country. Yeah. We got different cultures a little bit from our cities and states, but all in all, if you're funny, it's funny, I guess, you know,
that is true. Funny is funny.
Or I don't talk about something that these people aren't going to get. Like, I'm not going to do my winter snow bit down here because these guys don't ever get that stuff, you know?
Hmm. Well, I mean, it's like nowadays too, for my end, I was very self-conscious of that when I started out getting the opportunity to go on the road. But yeah, you realize that, you know, the references, a lot, some of the minute references might change a little. And actually I noticed that more bizarrely crossing the border into Canada, even 20 minutes away in Windsor at times. But, you know, all in all, it's the same thing. And, you know, a casino gig in California sucks as much as a casino gig in Michigan. No, it doesn't matter.
Still a casino.
Yeah. And, yeah, no, I mean, but you look at the nowadays with, like, big names like Bill Burr and people, it's not only do they, you know, perform all over the country, they're performing all over the world now to English-speaking audiences. And, yeah, it's just, I don't know if it's the internet, I don't know if it's, you know, just pop culture, but people know what you're talking about. We all live on the same planet, I guess.
That's a great point, Matt. You just reminded me. I heard an interview with Bill Burr,
uh-huh.
and somebody was asking about that. I forgot what interview it was, but he was getting interviewed, and he was in like, he went to like Australia to do mm-hmm. comedy,
mm-hmm.
and the guy's like, "Did you ever think that your comedy would resonate in Australia?" And he goes, "Hey, look," he goes, "to be honest with you, I might not resonate in Australia." He goes, "But when I go to Australia, I go to a 900-seat theater, and those 900 people, they know who I am.
Yeah.
They know who I am from the internet. They know." So I got my audience in Australia. If I just went to some comedy club and nobody knew I was performing, I might not resonate with them. It's the people that like me find me down there, you
yeah.
know? So that's a good point, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a big difference. When you hit that level, you have 900 people showing up in Perth mm-hmm. you know, to expressly to see the stuff they saw you do on the internet, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay, now let me ask you this, Matt. You've been all over the country, as Sal is doing right now, and you're back home.
Yep.
At the Comedy Castle. What do you bring to the Comedy Castle that you've gained from all your other road gigs? What bit of knowledge, what kind of little trick do you bring?
Repetition, confidence. And I think one of the best things about when you're home is that if, you know, that's where you started, that's where you cut your teeth, and now you're bringing back. And conversely, say you got nervous when you were on the road someplace you'd never been before, and now people might not necessarily know you at home, but you know them, so you have that home field advantage that you have now from all this experience on the road. And I mean, it's weird too, because I think in the same sense, I got to a point where I liked performing on the road more than I liked performing at home.
Mm.
And that's only because I think I felt pressure every time I got home to bring something new to the table.
Right.
It could just be, you know, I don't even know, because everybody always like, oh, that was great. It could be self-imposed. Like, even if nobody heard or remembered the jokes before, sometimes I feel like the walls have heard the jokes before.
Yeah. The so, walls, yeah. They've soaked them up.
And so, like, I always felt like it was like doing your home club once a year or whatever. For me, it was like my own, like, personal state of the union for my act. Like, okay, let's see where we're at this year. Let's see how far we've come, you know?
Hmm. So, yeah, that's good. That's a good way to use it. That's a barometer.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you know some of the cheat codes at home too. You know some of the references that make it that. Yeah.
Well, I want to say this, and this is not in any way derogatory, but you talk about cheat codes. You pulled out a Bernstein reference last night that was hysterical.
I always do it. I always do it at home. At one point, I might have had the artistic integrity not to, but I'm there to do my job. But it's like, I just don't. You know, I mean, that might be, you know, in pro wrestling, that might be a little salt in the eyes, or, you know, that might be a foreign object.
The chair over the
head. Yeah, but it's like, I'm not, you know, there's nobody from Comedy Central in the audience.
Right,
know?
Right.
I just don't care anymore about.
Hey, you're there. We're there to make people laugh.
And plus, then
that made him laugh.
I would think that might pull, you know, one would argue that can, you know, pull the audience in the wrong direction at the same time. But it's like, I get it out of the way as soon as I get up there, and then I can do the rest of my, you know, suicide jokes and school shooter jokes and, you know, all that guy.
It all makes the warm stuff.
Yeah, it makes
sunny
the pill.
Stuff.
You wrap the pill in a little bit of meat, and then it goes down a lot easier.
Some people might have said sugar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're dogs. They're dogs to me. That's why. They're animals.
Matt McLowry thinks of his audience as dogs. That's now been committed to posterity here.
Yeah,
that's a good observation. You get that little bit of pandering out, which we all do. And then,
get it out of the way.
Yes. And then the tougher stuff, it goes down a little easier.
Yeah.
They accept it.
Yeah, get it over. And that's the thing. The other thing too is, like, any special you watch, what is on Netflix, Bill Burr, what is the first couple minutes they open with? They're talking about the place they're performing.
Yes, always.
Just do it.
Yeah. I remember Seinfeld's, I don't even remember the last, what was the last album he put? I can't remember what it was.
He did that thing at the comic strip, the thing where he made it look like the 70s. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, you got to watch it.
Okay, no, I'm thinking like 13, 14 years ago. I'm telling you for the last time.
Yeah. In New York, yeah.
And the first thing, it's typical Seinfeld, he comes out and shits on the theater. He says, this is the something something theater. I don't know anything about it. Of course he doesn't. Because
I don't know anything about it.
He's like,
need to.
I spent zero time thinking about this. It's so typically Seinfeld. Anyway, people know my predilection for shitting on Seinfeld. So it's good to have you both here. Let's do a little quick check on the U of M game. I got a feeling that they're going to come out of the tunnel and they're going to be in even more trouble. Sal, you're saying they're going to come back. I don't know. It's 28-16 again.
It's going to be a close game.
Okay.
It's going to be a close game at the end. I'm gonna say that they're going to get their shit together. Harbaugh's giving them the Bo Schembechler speech right now, and they're gonna come out, and they're going to make a comeback here in the second half.
Okay. I hope so, man. You are the sunniest guy I know. You know that? You really are. And I'm a pretty sunny guy. But U of M and U of M, but the Lions in particular, they have just destroyed me over the last, the Lions my whole life, U of M over the past 10 years. But you're still sunny about this. They're down 28-16 to the number one ranked team in the nation, and you're saying they're coming back, right?
I am.
Okay.
I am. not gonna give up yet.
All right, man. All right. I appreciate that. All right, so where do we go with this? We wanted to talk about there was a story in the news about an NFL player betting on games. This is the first time I've heard of in the NFL. Now, we heard the NBA, refs doing that sort of thing. But this guy, an Arizona Cardinal, Josh Shaw, he's suspended for the rest of this year and next year for betting on league games. Now, Sal, we're both gamblers, but you're the guy, you're a sensible gambler, and you bet sports more than I ever do. So what's going on with this? I mean, that is a major faux pas, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Pete, just look at Pete Rose. I mean,
yeah.
the guy's career was ruined because the guy could be still managing in baseball right now if he didn't bet on, and God bless him, he only bet on his team to win, mm-hmm. which...
Yeah,
you bet on your team to lose. I think that's I think it's worse. If you bet on your team to win,
agree.
I don't think there's nothing wrong with it. But to be honest with you, but I'm an idiot. But because you're trying to win, you're always trying to win. If you're trying to lose, that's a different story. So, but anyway, you can't gamble. This idiot, I guess, was in Vegas, and he just went up to the window like a normal. You're not a normal person. You're in the NFL, and you're betting. You're going up to the window and betting an NFL game. Somebody takes a picture of you, knows who you are. It's just a stupid move. You're going to bet on a game. Have the freaking guy next to you go up and place your bet for you.
Do what I do when I was 14. I think we talked about this before. Northville Downs is in my hometown of Northville. When I was a kid, we would go in and we would bet the ponies. And we'd go up, $2, maybe $5 a race. And the lady at the window, she says, well, you can't bet. You're not old enough. And we would just turn around and point to some guy and say, well, that's my dad. He wants me to bet this. So we're playing at the Harness Raceway all day as 14-year-old hooligans. That's what this guy should have done. He should have found anybody to make the bet for him. He could have got a Keno girl to do it, right?
I mean, anybody. Here's what's interesting. I don't mean to switch sports, but Bob, you're going to appreciate this, and maybe you have an answer. Why does this guy get – he got suspended for going up and putting, $100 on, Frisco or whatever, who was playing that day. But why can – I think it was Hagler or one of those boxers went up and put $300,000 on himself –
yeah,
to win his boxing match, that's totally fine. Why is that fine?
I can tell you why. Because boxing is a zoo. That was Floyd Mayweather, actually, who did that. And he did it.
Yep, okay.
He did it in the open. He said, yeah, I'm betting on myself. And it was a little bit weird, but that's been done in secret in other times. But that's the difference between boxing and regulated sports.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that before. And that's one of the reasons I love it, because it's just... sometimes it's just a disaster. I mean, you look at these heavyweights we got. We got the Deontay Wilder. The guy, the guy can't, somehow he's champ. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. That's...
Well, they don't even have it on TV because it's gotten so boring now.
People don't watch it. MMA has taken over, Matt.
Well, it's just like the heavyweight division is 6'10" guys from Russia, boxing from the outside nowadays with their long arms, and people want to see action.
Yep, and you have some action. I mean, you had a lot of action in the Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury.
Yes.
Yeah, these two monoliths just going at each other, and if either one of them knew how to throw a real combination, it would be something. Now, this is kind of the thing. Maybe I'm getting off track here, but remember when we had Bill Detloff on, Sal?
Yeah.
The editor of Ring Magazine, no less than the editor of the Bible of Boxing. He was saying the same thing we've said, which was you look at the current crop of boxers and go, these are no good compared to my day when I was growing up, when I saw them. But I'm going to tell you, these heavyweights, they're not good. You put Muhammad Ali in with Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury, it's over, man. He's just going to make them look like clowns.
Yeah.
Or sure. Joe Frazier or George Foreman. I just, anyway, but so we're getting a little off track, but your point is well taken, Sal. Yeah. Floyd Mayweather bet on himself and nobody cared.
Yeah. Or maybe it's because it's an individual sport. I mean, you are out there by yourself, you know, where football, you're right, it's more regulated, but it's more of a team sport. So maybe if you bet on it, you can kind of get other guys involved or something, or maybe, you know, it's more of a team sport, so that might have something to do with it. I don't know, but it's probably the regulation thing you're talking about.
I think it's better for the game, you know, don't you?
I
think that makes it more exciting.
For guys to bet on them winning?
Yeah, yeah. If you're doing it publicly, yeah, it creates interest. I mean, you might, you know, if they were doing it all the time, it would become normalized. But yeah, I'm just speaking as like a fan of pro wrestling. When you tell me that Floyd Mayweather is betting on himself, I'm like, yeah, that's a good angle. You know, yeah. That's a good storyline. I like that.
Yeah, because people are going, okay, you know, you either love or hate Floyd Mayweather. There's no in between with this guy. Mm-hmm. And the haters are going to go, I hope he loses that $300,000 and he gets knocked. Well, newsflash. Floyd Mayweather can lose that $300,000 every night for the next year, and it won't dent his bank account. Won't mean a thing. But anyway, so I think I've taken this into a direction that.
Can I bet on the Harlem Globetrotters? Because they win every game.
Yeah, never bet on the Generals.
Did you ever see the Simpsons were crusty? You bet against the Globetrotters? I thought the Generals were due. Oh, come on. They were using a ladder.
Oh, it was the Washington Generals,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, and they're still doing this shtick 40 years later.
Yeah, I don't know who goes to see it, but yeah.
I remember as a kid, now I don't know about you, Matt and Sal, but I remember when I saw the Harlem Globetrotters at least a couple of times as a kid, went down to air-conditioned Cobo Arena, and I remember thinking, hey, why don't these guys play in the NBA? Why don't they play for the Pistons? We'd win every game. Well, they weren't well-rounded players. You know, you had guys that, you know, did 60-foot jumpers, and that was all they could do. They couldn't play D to save their life. But I always, you know, you have those kid thoughts watching that stuff.
Yeah, it's the sports entertainment of basketball, you know?
Yeah, it's like a rung above. Did you ever see donkey basketball?
No, I did not.
That was a thing in the 70s before you were born, Matthew.
Uh-huh.
This was in fact, Sal, you remember this, in Livonia, Michigan. Donkey basketball being held at Stevenson High School. You remember that?
Yeah.
You had guys on friggin' donkeys in a gymnasium.
In the gymnasium.
In the gymnasium.
Right.
Yes. And the donkeys would shit on the floor. And thank God it was, you know, what do you call that? Lacquered, whatever it was. Oh. But it was a hoot. And the games only would go on for 20 minutes because it was just, you know, nonsense. Did you ever remember going to one of those, buddy?
Well, I went to that one time. And then I remember when I was in junior high, obviously Matt probably won't remember this guy, but I don't know if you did. There was a guy, and now so many years later, I totally know what he was going through. There was a guy named Crazy George. Do you remember him? He just did these basketball tricks.
Yes.
He was solo. He was by himself.
Yes.
And he would spin the ball on his finger for like an hour, and he would do crazy stuff. And he dressed like an American flag. He had shorts that were like an American.
Yeah.
And his name was Crazy George. And he came to my junior high one time. And now, years later, I mean, the guy was so miserable when you talked to him. Because he was just doing a gig. He was probably getting like $200 to come to my junior high. And he was so miserable about doing what he was doing. But to me, it was like meeting Magic Johnson, you know?
As a kid, yeah. You're like, it's Crazy George.
Crazy George. I don't know.
Yeah, when you just see something. Yeah, when you see a guy out there doing something like that, you have to understand that it's not plan A. You know what I mean?
Well, as a kid, you think it is.
Yeah, you do.
He's living the dream.
You do, but yeah. If he's covered in an American flag gimmick, and he's doing tricks. That's not what he wanted. He had another end game in mind at one point.
And it devolved into that. Good
it
point.
It became that.
And that, and you know, that reminds me too of another guy. Do you remember the king and his court? That might have been around when you were a kid too, Matt. The softball guy. He had it was a 6-man softball team.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. And he would go town to town, and they would take on any, you know, local championship softball team, and they would just smoke them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was fast pitch softball. Do you remember that, yep. Sal?
Oh, absolutely. I actually got to play. I got to play against him.
Oh, did you really? Did you get a hit off him?
Yeah.
All right.
he threw. I think I might have told the story on one of our earlier podcasts, but I got to play against him in Canton over there off of Plymouth Road and Hagerty over there, that softball field right there.
Yeah.
And, I got to hit again. He throws like 120 miles. I struck out 3 straight times.
Wow.
And then my 4th time up, I like literally just said, okay, I'm literally going to start swinging when he's like his arm's going back, you know? And I swung and I hit a ground ball down the first base line. I was so late in my swing. I somehow got it down the first base line, so I got a hit off the guy. I got a hit off the king in this court. I can't believe it.
Hey, buddy, that is a hell of a feat. Nobody hit the king. You hit the king.
I know.
Nobody brought you home. I guarantee you nobody hit you home, right?
So what was...
No. I got stranded at first, and that was... I didn't even get a double because I was shocked I hit the ball. I was like, oh, my God, I hit the ball. I didn't even... He was amazing, though, man. King in his court. Only had like 2 outfielders. They put a guy at short and a guy at first and a 1 outfielder because nobody ever hit him.
Yeah.
Was this for charity or what was his end game? Because it just seems bizarre. Like
it was like a scrimmage game, so it wasn't even a registered game. And
okay.
It was just a warm-up for him to play some other team the next day. So it was like a scrimmage. I mean, it was not, who knows? He might have thrown a changeup when I hit that.
It
sounds
like such a weird life. Like, I have an idea. We'll get a bunch of baseball players. They're not good enough to be in the majors, but they're better than everybody else. And we'll go from town to town and play local softball teams, intramural teams, and we'll kick their ass. You know?
That's pretty much
and
it.
And they'll want to have their asses kicked.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And but your question earlier was, yeah, there was a charity angle to
okay.
it. But they took 80% of it.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, of course they did. There was definitely a racket there, I assumed.
It's can you imagine going from town to town? You were just like, as a professional comedian, you would put yourself up
guy.
At an open mic
yeah.
night and go, come on!
Yeah.
And just, you know, slaughter everybody and take 80% of the
mm-hmm,
door.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would just like to see this guy at bars, you know, trying to meet women, trying to work his occupy his line of work into things, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So what do you do?
Oh, I play softball.
Really? So are you good?
I have 150 mile per hour underhand.
That's fantastic.
I can throw
but
like
you're,
a
but
woman
you're 72.
Really yeah, exactly. You're still 72?
Oh, he's still doing it. I mean,
oh, for real?
Yeah, I don't know how old he is now, but yeah, I mean, he seemed old when we were young, right, mm-hmm. Sal?
Yeah, he was probably, you know, yeah, he was probably 40 years old back then when I was hitting against him. You know, I was like 22 or whatever the hell I was.
Well, that's my favorite part is when you get into that Mickey Rourke, the wrestler era of their
yeah.
career. Where they're still out in the same tattered, you know, same tattered outfit, still trying to do the same old act.
Yeah.
And the people who come to see him, come to see him. You still see Gallagher out there, for God's sake.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, we have it. Well, Randy the Ram has more integrity than Gallagher
yeah,
at this
sure,
point.
Yeah.
There was never a Randy the Ram 2.
No. No, no. So, we used to do Connections in Lansing, and they had... The wall of headshots, and they would have 9 headshots a piece of some of the bigger comics they had there.
Yeah.
And there was Drew Carey, there was Dave Chappelle, there was, I don't know, maybe Chris Rock, there was Kevin Hart. I know Kevin Hart performed there at some point. And then one of them, Gallagher 2. Not even Gallagher 1. Meanwhile, Gallagher 1 is doing one-nighters and stuff.
Yeah.
But they've got Gallagher 2 up there like it's George Carlin, you know?
That whole thing was such a disaster for we have a mutual friend Mike Green who had Gallagher 1 at his club not long ago, and Mike is such a nice guy.
He's a beautiful man.
He's not going to say what we'll say, but the show had no integrity again.
He should sell his act to like a Latino guy and call it Gallagher Juan, J-U-A-N.
We're going to get letters for that, Sal. We're going to get angry letters. People
hashtag are
gonna
cancel Sal and Bob.
You can't cancel a podcast. By the way, we're so social, aren't we, Sal? Look how social we are.
We are. We're on everything.
We're everywhere. And we have guests and we have repeat guests. And Matt is on for the third time. We recently hit number 50 in the UK. Not so recently, we hit 150 in the US. And that's with 700,000 podcasts out there competing with us. So that means something, right?
It's awesome, man.
I think it is awesome. It's because we're so social. That's what it is. And we got our listenership is building every week. And it's because we come on here, we talk comedy, we talk about stand-up comedy, which is a big, important subset of the comedy world. And we kind of let people in on, you know, what goes on really backstage and on stage. And, you know, even when you're not even near a stage like us right now, we're just shit talking Gallagher and Gallagher too. But it's, we're in our second year now, and we're pretty happy to be on the air.
No, and you know what? Speaking of kind of making money, you know, Harlem Globetrotters made money. This Crazy George made money. You can make money doing anything. I was talking to Greg and the owner today for breakfast, and Greg mentioned this thing called Twitch. I don't even know if you guys have ever heard of it.
Twitch,
it's a site.
I've heard of it.
Where
yeah.
you go and play video games, and then people donate money to watch you play video games. I'm like, what the hell is going on? There's like 20-year-old kids making more than us doing stand-up by just playing video games online.
What the hell kind of time do you have to have on your hands to watch someone else play video games? And I mean, this as somebody who's got a lot of time on his hands. I cannot fathom and paying them to do it. And that's the other thing, too, is like, I actually, there was a wrestler who playfully dropped the, not the hard R version of the N-word, but the A one.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And just playfully, but just, you know, impersonating somebody else. And it's like, why would you give yourself another medium to get in trouble in this day and age?
Another medium to get in trouble.
Because eventually, if you're online all the time, you're going to get too cut. You're going to forget. And you're gonna do something wrong.
Speaking of doing something wrong, I got a U of M update here. It's 35-16 OSU. This, Sally, I know you're an optimist, buddy, but I think this thing is over. This is going to be a runaway. It's going to be awful.
Oh, my God. Over-under was 52, so that went over easily.
Yeah, it's already at 51. This is OSU, it's only, oh, my God, they got 10 minutes left in the third. They're going to score 80 points.
That was the key. Michigan needed to take that first possession and go down and stick it in the end zone. It would have made it a game, but now apparently they punted and Ohio State scored.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not looking good now.
No, and that's you know what? That's kind of the end of our reporting on the U of M slaughter, and the end of the show here. We didn't say it at the top of the show, but our one hit wonder is Hail to the Victors. they're not victors today. I don't think they're going to be victors against Ohio State anytime soon, but we're going to wrap this up and we're going to say thank you to you, sir, show partner Sal, for being on the road and calling in and being a road warrior.
Yeah, hey, no problem, guys. Glad to be a part of the show. And we've got some great shows come up. We're going to hit some steakhouses here in the future. We've got some great guests lined up. So keep listening to the Sal and Bob Show, man. We're going to have a good December and a good 2020.
Yes, I agree. We got a good 2020 ahead of us. We want to thank our guest, Mr. Matt McClowery, again. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
For coming in.
I have a blast.
And again, you lit it up.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
So, absolutely. You really did.
I Okay, great. I would plug the next two shows, but they will have happened before this airs.
So. Yeah, right. can I do a little plug in here?
Oh.
You guys mind?
No, by all means.
I got a new CD coming out, and it's coming out December 11th.
Nice.
It's on Tour Records, and it's called $10 Gift Card. And it's going to be, it's going to be on XM Sirius and all that stuff. And then we're going to have a release party in January. So anyway, that's my bit of news for the
awesome.
Congrats on that, Bob. You worked real hard for it, man. Congrats, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. And thank you, Nate Armbruster.
Yeah.
For
Nate, thanks a lot. And Matt, good luck to you tonight, buddy.
Thank you, Sal. Thank you. Good luck to you
great
also.
Great shows. And yeah, safe travels back to L.A.
Oh, thank you, Sal.
Yeah.
Best of luck to you also.
Yep.
Oh, I got one more update for you, Sal. U of M has now put in Bobby Boucher as a running back. They're pulling out all the stops, but they're still down 35-16. Okay, that's it for us. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy your week.
Thanks a lot, you guys. See you back in Michigan.